Hello and welcome to another episode here at the Damage Report. I am John Adirola, very lucky to be joined, as I so often am on Mondays, by Francesca Fiorentini, host of the Bituation Room. Welcome back, Francesca.
Slappy Monday.
I hope that it is.
No, it's gonna slap. Is that what kids say?
If they don't yet say it, at some point they'll get around to it. We will be current and cool at some point. We got a lot that we're gonna be talking about today, a lot going on, including updates on the possibility that the January 6th commission could be making criminal referrals in regards to Donald Trump. So will the DOJ be acting on that? A weird legal back and forth over a woman seemingly being charged with murder briefly for an abortion. That's horrifying. So we'll give you the details and some absolutely insane corruption, both in rewards for things done in the past and in anticipation of things done in the future, having to do with Jared Kushner. So you're gonna wanna get the details on that. And then we'll be closing out the show with news from around the world and meanwhile in some really potentially significant electoral news from some of our close allies, and then also animal news from around the world. And one of the most amazing videos I've seen in a long time. That's all coming up soon, so definitely everyone buckle up for that. Before we get into that though, Francesca, you are fresh off another episode of the Bituation Room. What's going on there?
My God, it was so good. And I always say that, but like I'm serious, like last night was really amazing. We talked all about China with Toby Chow. He's a writer and a progressive political strategist. So we talked about the macro, the geopolitical, but then also, you know, how progressives here in the United States who don't believe in ratcheting up all this rhetoric against China, how we should feel and what we should push for. So please listen to that or watch back at Franny Fio, my YouTube channel. It was awesome. Really good.
Awesome. That sounds awesome. And this will be too. So everyone in anticipation of this news, if you're on a platform that allows for hitting the like button, that'd be great so that people know we're live. And with all that said, why don't we jump into the news? And in fact, we're gonna be starting off with this video.
The New York Times reporting this morning that your committee has concluded that you have enough evidence to make a criminal referral for President Trump to the Justice Department for obstructing an official proceeding and for conspiracy to defraud the United States. Is that true? Do you have enough evidence to refer Trump for criminal charges?
Well, we have not made a decision about referrals on the committee. I think that it is absolutely the case. It's absolutely clear that what President Trump was doing, what a number of people around him were doing, that they knew it was unlawful, they did it anyway.
So that's Liz Cheney, to some extent, dodging the question there. The reports that have been out, which we're gonna discuss, are that the January 6th commission believes that it is a pretty clear case that there was criminal intent, that laws were broken. And there she sort of dances around it, saying that she believes, but not wanting to tip the hand too much of the committee. But this is obviously consequential, considering all that was done in the wake of the 2020 election. And since Donald Trump is almost certainly going to be running in 2024, whether he's being investigated for insurrection and all that seems important too. So let's see if there's anything else we can get out of Liz Cheney in the second clip.
I think what we have seen is a massive and well-organized and well-planned effort that used multiple tools to try to overturn an election. You've seen just in the last few days a plea agreement from one of the leaders of the Proud Boys, which lays out in really chilling detail the extent to which violence was planned, the extent to which the message that went out on December 19th about the planning, about the rally in Washington. And don't forget, Donald Trump tweeted out that message, be there, be wild. That the day after that message, the organization and the planning started, and that they understood, that they knew that they were going to attempt to use violence to try to stop the transfer of power.
Okay, so I think that Liz Cheney is right to remind everyone, in case they didn't already know, and I'm sure some who watch right-wing news might not, that this was a broad-based effort, a lot of different groups, some working in conjunction, communicating with others, some directly communicating with the inner circle for Donald Trump, planning a multi-pronged effort to stop this certification from happening. But all of that is somewhat to the side of the main concern, which is, so do you have enough to warrant a criminal referral for Donald Trump or do you not? Let's jump into the reporting, because she's being a little bit squirrely But there was a lot revealed over the weekend. So supposedly, according to the New York Times, the leaders of the House committee investigating in the Capitol attack have grown divided over whether to make that criminal referral to the DOJ, even though they've concluded that they have enough evidence to do so. Now, that is what people involved in the discussions in the January 6th commission have been telling reporters, although one of the people on the committee, Adam Kinzinger, says there is no split. And I'm not going to address what we will do, but DOJ will be able to read everything we do, and it's their choice. But this split nonsense is nonsense. Although I guess it wasn't nonsense to the people who were telling reporters, Francesca, because that's the report they came out with.
I'm so confused, because if there was a split, it would come from the Republicans. And that's Liz Cheney, Kissinger. Who else do we've got on the Republicans? Do we have on the committee other people who've been shunned and stripped of their rights to be a Republican forever and ever? So my question is it Liz? Is Cheney the one who doesn't want a criminal referral? Like, it's not really clear what's going on. But I will just say, like, I just wish, and this is a very side point, I wish Liz Cheney was a little crazier, just a little, just like a. You know, she's got the charm of a Cheney, which is essentially like the personality of a Saltine. It's just like, I want her to be like a little, just say something like, and Disney's grooming children, so that like the right will listen to her.
That's true.
You know, because what she's saying is insane, a coordinated, strategic, multi-prong way to overturn the election. And like, it's just in one ear, out the other. But anyway, interesting, there's no split. Kissinger's Twitter tweet really does sound like there's actually agreement from reading between the lines that there should be a criminal referral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, look, so those are the only two Republicans actually on there, and they're the two Republicans, bear in mind. But okay, let's dive past the PR effort that you have from Liz Cheney on Jake Tapper's show, and then what Kinzinger, whatever it is that he's trying to do on Twitter. So apparently what is actually going on, whether they're split or not, this is what the debate is about. It's on whether making a referral, which is considered a largely symbolic act, it does not actually require the DOJ to act, would backfire by politically tainting the Justice Department's, what they say is an expanding investigation into it. Okay, so what you need to understand about this is that there is the January 6th commission, which is members of Congress who are investigating this, and they've been doing a lot, including making some criminal referrals already. At the same time, you have the DOJ, which one would expect would be taking this seriously. This reporting from the New York Times is implying that, no, this is expanding, they're gonna do some stuff, and so, if they're going to end up acting in the DOJ, there are a couple different ways that could go down strategically, and also in terms of how this will be framed. What the debate seems to center on is, if the DOJ is going to act anyway, why have them act based on a criminal referral from the January 6th commission, which could be attacked by the other side as being politically biased? Now, that's what a lot of people will agree on. I would add on to that, it don't matter who does the investigation, it's gonna be attacked as politically biased. So let's just bear that in mind. But if it is the January 6th commission with Schiff and Cheney, I guess that might be an easier target. Does it matter how easy of a target it is, Francesca?
Look, I think that no matter what Republicans say, to the credit of this committee, it is bipartisan. And as much as I hate to give a Cheney credit, you gotta give Liz some credit, and you gotta give Kissinger some credit, even though they're heinous on a million other issues. But hey, can we agree we shouldn't overturn a Democratic election? Cool, like the one thing, you know? So I do think that it matters whether it comes from the January 6th commission. And if they think, like you're saying, that they won't get attacked if it goes another way, they're idiots. Mm-hmm. And also, if they're too afraid, well, then that would be super on brand for a lot of Democrats or Republicans who cannot stand up to this extremist base.
Yeah, well, let me give people just a little bit more information in case they haven't been following too much of this. So one of the reasons that the committee seems to be changing its mind, not about whether a crime was committed and not about whether Trump should be investigated, but about whether they should personally weigh in, apparently is coming about based on a story that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. And that was a ruling that was made by Judge David Carter, the Federal District Court for Central California. That ruling led some committee and staff members who might be the ones that leaked this information, I guess, to the New York Times, to argue that even though they felt they'd amassed enough evidence to justify calling for prosecution, the judge's decision would carry greater weight with Mr. Garland. That was a decision where he said, it appears at this point indisputable that crimes were committed, that the intent was there. Now, that was a decision that was not about the heart of whether there should be an investigation. It was only concerned with whether about 100 different emails should have to be given to the committee. But the judge apparently felt like the evidence was so strong that he went above and beyond the actual, like the core concern of that case. And so anyway, they think that Mr. Garland, I guess, he could just follow up on what the judge is saying. He could follow up on whatever it is that his investigators are finding, and that might be a little bit more immune from criticism from the right. I almost get the strategy of that.
Yeah.
Just purely logically, I don't know that it matters. And personally, I would like to see the committee actually do something. It has been months and months and months now, and they've released a little bit of information about text messages. They've given referrals on a couple Trump cronies. And other than that, not much has really been going on.
I mean, interestingly, they've given criminal referrals, criminal contempt referrals for people who are refusing to either turn over evidence or testify. Merrick Garland's been sitting on those for a while. So I think also the idea that Garland would do anything with a criminal referral for Donald Trump is a pretty high bar given what he's done so far. But hey, maybe he's biding his time, he's got a whole plan. But I agree with you, yeah, it is an interesting strategy that yes, maybe a judge will absolutely bring this criminal referral. My question is like, why not both? Like the little meme of the girl, like just can we do both?
Why not? By the way, I also want you to be prepared for if anything is gonna come from the committee specifically, here's what the timeline looks like. They're gonna be holding public hearings in May and June. So we are right on the cusp of public hearings. Maybe we can talk for a minute about what we think might come from that. But they're gonna have a final report in September. And that is, of course, just a couple of months before the actual election. And that's important for a couple of reasons. So
yes,
the first is that in theory, it could influence the election. I don't think it's gonna have a super strong effect one way or the other. Although, look, if they come out and they're not pushing for any referral or anything like that, you can imagine how fans of Trump are going to greet that. This totally illegitimate committee now not wanting to act will be seen as evidence of his innocence, I suppose. But also, this will be just about the last opportunity they have to act, because it is unlikely that that committee will survive what's gonna happen in November. At least that's what I think, Francesca. What do you think?
They have to get this on, you know, I mean, the clock is ticking. They have to do this before potentially the House flips and they're no longer in charge. And then all those referrals, those kinds of criminal referrals, like the House has to vote on. And so far the House has said, yeah, we agree that you can't just like ignore and obstruct Congress and like a congressional investigation, cool. Well, if the House flips red, then all bets are off. I absolutely think that it matters to do this before the midterms. I think they're being strategic about it. And I do think it could, in practicality, you know, if we get the names of the folks who were sending these messages, it doesn't bode well. A lot of them are not up for re-election this term, but it just doesn't bode well for their friends and the other crazies who want to get re-elected or elected for the first time. Again, not holding my breath, but I hope they do. I hope they publicize it. The Benghazi hearings were, you know, just like on C-SPAN and CNN.
Yeah.
Come 100%. On.
By the way, you were asking for a crazy. Well, Stephen Miller apparently is going to be brought in for an interview soon. They've conducted 800 witness interviews already. They've got another 100, including follow-up interviews, which that, like, if they're bringing a person in for the second time, it could be as a result of evidence that has since been found out about that person. It could be about asking one person questions about the things that other people have said. So this could be fruitful. Will we actually see it before the report? God only knows. They've done a little bit of leaking, but not a ton. And the final point I will make on this is, I think that January 6th was important. I think the fact that so many are so ready to just move on from it is scary, especially when the movement that made it happen is stronger and more revved up than they were when they did the insurrection. They're around, they're gonna be back. God only knows what is coming, and we're trying to have people be prepared for that. At the same time, though, while we will acknowledge the short-term political consequences of action or inaction on the part of the January 6th committee, we also think that that should not be a thing that Biden is focusing on, or at least I'll say, should not be the thing that they're focusing on. The idea that some report from this committee is gonna come out, drop right before the election, and save the Democrats' asses, I don't think that that's gonna happen. I think that that's irrational to expect, and I don't even think that should be the thing that saves them. They should be acting, they should be making good on their promises. That's the thing that their electoral future should be riding on, in my view.
I agree with that. I just wanna add one thing. I don't think that the Democrats are an opposition party. We don't have an opposition party in this country at all. We have a party that is the status quo party that has gone along with corporate rule for a very, very long time. And Republicans were down with that until they went full fash. So to me, you know, I'm with Cori Bush. I think we expel these Congress people. Do I think that's gonna happen? Not with this kind of Democratic leadership. In no world would that happen. So I totally agree with you. It's not gonna flip the tables, but if they were stronger from jump after January 6th, I do think it was a galvanizing moment and shoe on the other foot. If Republicans were in office and it was Democrats trying to overturn the election, you're damn right that they would have made a stink and they would have brought up Article 4 of the 14th, you know, amendment or whatever, 5, 4 or 5, it's around there, you know, about like you cannot aid and abet insurrectionists and still maintain your office. Yeah. So yes, but also not with these Democrats could we politicize or actually take advantage of what is clearly a ball in the court of honestly democracy and real change.
Yeah, and by the way, related to what you just said, the cases having to do with Marjorie Greene and Madison Cawthorn about whether they should be allowed to run, those are, you know, still continuing in a variety of forms. We're not reporting on them, but that is part of this concern. I'm very torn on that sort of thing. My dream would be that they just lose in a regular election, but we also understand how gerrymandering works. Doesn't seem super likely, but stay tuned for that. For now though, we are gonna have to take our first break. When we come back, we're gonna be breaking down some scary news from over the weekend coming out of Texas of a woman apparently being charged with murder over an abortion. We'll have that and more after this. Over the weekend, news broke coming out of Texas that appeared to say that a woman was going to be charged with murder over committing abortion. Now, there's been some added nuance and big legal developments. So let's all catch up on what's going on, because a lot of people very justifiably scared about what they were seeing in the story. So the news, as of more recently, the district attorney of Starr County, Texas, just yesterday said he would drop a murder charge against Lizelle Herrera, a woman who was arrested on Thursday for allegedly causing the quote, death of an individual by self-induced abortion. And admittedly, there were a lot of details missing from this, including what law it was that she was apparently accused of having broken, whether she was accused of helping a different person self-manage an abortion, or whether it was hers. Now, as of right now, the charges are being dropped, understandably, because there was a lot of pressure that was put on them as a result of this. And in fact, we're not gonna go into the details, but you can see the statement from the DA's office wanting to get out in front of this before it spread even wider. But let's see what we can learn about this. Let's see what we can figure out. Ms. Herrera was arrested and detained near the Mexico border. According to the sheriff's office statement, she was indicted on the murder charge after she intentionally and knowingly caused the death of an individual by self-induced abortion. Okay, so self-managed abortion is any abortion outside of specific medical care. It can include the use of abortion pills. In some cases, it can include those attempted with supplements, herbs, or vitamins, multiple contraceptive pills, or emergency contraception pills, or physical trauma. We want to make sure that you understand that there are attempts to do it sometimes by using like a ton of Plan B, because I can't stress enough that using Plan B is not having an abortion, just in case any Texas Republicans are listening. Let's make sure that they understand that. And still, many details of the indictment remain unclear, but activists on both sides of the abortion debate got fired up over this, specifically because Texas has taken some extreme measures over the last year to get rid of women's reproductive rights, allowing basically anyone to act like Dog the Bounty Hunter and sue the pants off anyone involved in a woman using the rights she's had as long as she's been alive. So Francesca, what do you make of all this?
A lot of things to say. The first thing I want to say, obviously I was very happy that the DA dropped these murder charges of an alleged abortion or an abortion. But if you read that statement, the DA also says that the investigation was absolutely correct and fine, and the sheriffs did their job, essentially saying she should have been arrested. It was okay that she spent two nights in jail, and that $500,000, which organizations, pro-choice organizations, had to raise.
Wow.
From, I'm sure, people who are listening and people who care about this case, that was all good. So essentially it was, I'm dropping these charges, but it does not preclude a future incident very similar to this, which is someone is investigated for doing what they want with their own bodies. I mean, so anyway, I am chilled by this. It is very, very, very chilling and scary. The second thing I'm gonna say is this happened because hospital staff referred her to the police. So we're talking about major HIPAA violations, but also something that happens a lot. I did some reporting on this in El Salvador. I talked about it on my Patreon only episode, but really briefly, what happens when you have places that have really draconian abortion laws is that hospital staff do not understand what is the law or what is not the law.
Yeah.
And what they do sometimes, I'm not saying all hospital staff, they will refer people to the police. Women have woken up in El Salvador chained to the bed because they are accused of performing an abortion because that is 100% illegal in that country. So this is a slippery slope we are headed down.
Yeah, and that, look, that's a world that obviously we find horrifying, reprehensible. And that is a world that activists in Texas and other states are trying to barrel us over the edge of a cliff toward. They might not have the legal status quo in Texas that they want just yet, but they're working towards it. And by the way, take a look at some of these insane updates on this. So in terms of what could they have thought they were charging her under, what law did they think could have applied? So a professor at the University of Texas School of Law says, if prosecutors are literally charging her with murder under Texas law, it's likely they either forgot about the exception for murder or they have some other theory for why this could apply. I do not accept that they forgot about an exception. That seems pretty foundational to this area of law. Now, we don't think it has to do with SB 8, which is the Texas abortion law that we've talked about so much. Maybe it's just a test thing. Maybe they thought they could get away with it. I don't know. But this is the sort of situation where, like, thank God there are activists and media that raise the profile of this, that make sure that the eyes of the nation are on it. Because if nobody had paid attention to this, is it possible that they still would have dropped the charges? Maybe, but it certainly seems less likely. And there's so much that we don't know. It is conceivable. One could come up with something that could have been done where the original thing, I guess, was merited. God only knows. But they haven't provided any of that evidence. And considering all of the other context about the radical anti-abortion laws and efforts that are undergoing, that are being done in Texas and other states, thank God that we got them to back off in this case, Francesca.
Yeah, I mean, but again, it is that nebulous, all these new nebulous laws that are causing people, even who seek legal, even under the really strictest guidelines of their state's new abortion, draconian abortion laws, they're like, well, I guess I can't get an abortion. Healthcare providers always get this question. People who provide, who can terminate pregnancies, they always get the question is it legal? Is it legal? It's the number one question they get from people who are seeking to terminate a pregnancy, which is devastating because it keeps people away because they think that they're doing something illegal. And that is the point of a lot of these laws. It's not necessarily to get $10,000 off of people, although that is insane, but it is to send that chill to prevent people from even trying to do this in the first place.
Yeah.
The thing I want to say is I looked at the Texas Penal Code and it is in there. There is an exemption for murder, so-called murder, if it is the termination of a pregnancy, if it is a physician terminating a pregnancy, if it is the person carrying that fetus terminating the pregnancy. Watch how Texas will come for that part of the penal code. Just watch.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, people are already saying, like, we are all trying to figure out what is going to happen if and when the Supreme Court rules on Roe the way that we think that they might. And what are states like Texas gonna do in the immediate aftermath of that? Now, thankfully, there is a little bit of balance in some states, as we've been reporting, both because we want to focus on good news where it exists and also because it's objectively true. There are states that are increasing access and affordability of the exercise of reproductive rights, including abortion. So in Maryland, lawmakers expanded who can perform abortions after overriding the governor's veto. The House voted 90-46 on Saturday. State Senate members 29-15. So Hogan, the governor of Maryland, is a Republican, although considered one of the less crazy ones, not necessarily in the vein of like a Trump. But anyway, the majority of both the state's chambers are Democrats, so they've split government there. The bill will now become law and take effect on July 1st. And what it does is, it's known as the Abortion Care Access Act. It says that qualifying providers include those whose medical licenses or certifications include the performance of abortions, and it establishes the Abortion Care Clinical Training Program, in which the state must contract an organization to develop abortion care training programs at least 2 community sites. And honestly, that last bit, like, I almost can't even believe in 2022 that that's possible. Like, the story of access to this sort of care in America for decades now has been an ever shrinking number of providers, mm-hmm. to the point where some states have like less providers than you can count on your hand. Some entire states have 1 or 0, and you might have to go across the border to another state to get it. The idea that they would be providing training to increase the number of those providing this sort of care, it's just shocking that that's actually happening. Great news, shocking in a good way, but what are your thoughts, Francesca?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that beats back all those restrictions on like whether or not you have to have, you know, a certain width of hallway in order to be able to perform an abortion, right? Or whether you have hospital admitting privileges. Like, in no world do you need hospital admitting privileges when you're doing these procedures. So all of those things, all of those hurdles. So thank God that the Democrats here were able to push back. And again, this stuff happens on the state level. So like, if you guys, you know, locally, we have to be reproductive justice voters locally when it comes to our state assemblies and state legislatures, when it comes to the people that we are supporting for that, you know, so just know that it's not just a national level. Let's turn our eyes to sort of locally where it's happening in our own states.
Exactly. And you made a reference to this, just in case people don't know, like about the width of hallways and things like that. So one of the things they did, I think this might have been specifically in Texas. There was the big debate with, you know, there was the filibuster and everything. What they'll do is they'll go to one of the few places in a state that still provides access to abortion care. Mm-hmm. They will do something incredibly petty. Like, I can't stress how petty this is. They will get a tape measure. They will measure the height of the ceiling. And then they will say, you have to have ceilings that are a foot higher to be able to provide abortion access, knowing that these places, which are already in difficult financial situations, can't afford to raise all of the ceilings, and so they'll go under. That's how incredibly petty this is. And again, as I've said in other issues, do we have on our side, you know, a group that is as fired up? I'm not saying to do insanely petty things like that, but to do whatever it takes to protect people's rights. And it's one of those things where there are so many issues where the ferocity of the opposition we face is in no way matched by those on our side. We have great activists, and this is one of the areas where we do that are protecting people like Lizelle Herrera and others, but it never ends. And the funding is so insane on the other side to strip away these rights.
Yeah, it is. It is. And obviously, you know, shout out to Liz Winstead of Abortion Access Front, who they do amazing work. And obviously, shout out to La Frontera Fund, which is the group that actually was able to help raise $500,000. But I think you're right. There is a lot. There's a nonprofit industrial complex when it comes to reproductive access and justice that sadly has not been able to translate into the kind of political power that has the teeth and ferocity, like you're saying, to truly beat back electorally and legislatively beat back some of these attacks. And so it's like, you know, you feel, you know, for anyone who thinks or thought that this issue was done or that this issue is milquetoast, this issue is a lib issue. No, it is a radical and important and critical issue about justice and human rights, because we know who are the people who are going to suffer when Roe v. Wade is stripped away. It's the most vulnerable. It is low income people, people of color.
Okay, let's switch up our gears and get to maybe a demonstration of what I was asking for. People who are willing to really fight for their values in this.
What do we do? Stand up, fight back. Then what do we do? Stand up, fight back. When our community is under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back.
Then what do we do?
Stand up, fight back.
What do we do?
Stand up, fight back.
When West Virginia is under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back.
So what you just saw is footage of a group doing the coal baron blockade. Basically, a group of activists being willing to indeed being arrested while blockading the coal company that has made Senator Joe Manchin incredibly, incredibly wealthy. And we know that Joe Manchin, perhaps more than any other individual right now, is stopping the US government from dealing head on with the climate crisis that we are being faced with. And state police almost immediately began arresting people. I think we have a little bit of footage of that, actually. So there, at least 10 people. I've seen different numbers elsewhere, at least 10 people being arrested. And think about the inequality you have right here. These are people that are desperately fighting against the use of coal, fossil fuels, for a number of different reasons. In terms of health, obviously the pollution is really bad in terms of the climate and all that, but also to fight against the political corruption that we know exists. Meanwhile, Joe Manchin is off on a yacht somewhere, making $500,000 on average a year, specifically from coal. He makes way more, but specifically from the coal that they're protesting, $500,000. It's a hell of a system we've got here, Francesca.
Yeah, driving his Maserati through Sunrise Movement organizers and telling people off the back of his yacht, as they're, this is not the first time. And I'm hats off to these 16 people who are arrested and to everyone who dares stand up. You're doing more than the Democrats have been doing against Joe Manchin, because we're so afraid to hurt his little fifis. We're so afraid that he's going to walk away. We can't play hardball. All these centrists in the House are super scared, slash he's running cover for their ultimate corporate agendas. You know, when the New York Times sounds the alarm on something, everything is on fire. So New York Times talking about Joe Manchin's conflict of interest and the fact that he has greased his political career with coal and fossil fuels for decades. And the only difference now is that he is King Manchin. He's King Joe. He's the real President Joe, right? Like, he is there blocking the Build Back Better bill, blocking any kind of climate legislation. And suddenly all of his conflicts of interest that he's managed to get away with for so long, that have funded his lavish lifestyle and his complete arrogance and throwing West Virginians under the bus, suddenly we are all West Virginians. Suddenly we are all the people who are being screwed out because this fool is greedy. Not just this country, this entire planet. So, yeah. I mean, yes to this action and yes to thousands more.
Yeah, and by the way, one of the reasons I want to talk about this was to remind people, in case they missed it, that over this last week, there have been protests all over the world, which has received a little bit of coverage, but not nearly enough. We showed you footage of climate scientists, activists, and professors being arrested in downtown LA for every one of the protesters who had, they'd chained themselves to stop access to a Chase. Chase does a lot of investment in fossil fuels. There were two dozen cops in full riot gear. This is how scary climate scientists are. And that happened, I think they said there were something like 1,000 different protests around the globe, country all over. And so this was part of this. And they are really standing up for a lot of different groups, including, by the way, coal workers. So they had signs there at that protest saying solidarity with all coal workers. And here's the thing, the other side right now that doesn't want to do anything with climate change, they will pretend as if they have the back of the coal workers, and these environmentalists just don't understand. But that could not be farther from the truth. First of all, when the coal workers go on strike, all those pro fossil fuel people, where are they? Are they standing in solidarity with them there? No. And by the way, the coal industry does not employ a lot of people, partially because coal is not cost effective against renewable energy in the way that it used to be. And eventually, as it gets more and more unequal against renewable energy, what's gonna happen to those coal workers? You think Joe Manchin is gonna be fighting for them? No, they're gonna shut down the plant. They're gonna throw people to the side of the street. That's it. Whereas these environmental activists right now want a just transition. They want people to be trained to work in other industries, not only for their economic well-being, but also for their physical well-being. These are people that are still being abused and suffering physical side effects of the work that they do with coal. So I love this movement for so many reasons. I really hope people don't look away, that they know that this is going on.
And I hope more politicians stick it to Manchin. I hope they're not afraid to use these moments to throw down with activists, throw down with coal miners, throw down with communities that have been left hung out to dry. You know he hates it, and he's not gonna change his mind anyway. So why not just drive the knife in? Just needle him a little bit.
Exactly.
But,
yeah.
But you know, there's a respectability politics, so Democrats still participate in. But it's like, no, we can't. He might not sign the bill. He's not gonna sign the bill.
Exactly. And the crazy thing about the respectability politics is you can't do certain things, but other things totally cool. So for instance, calling Manchin out, declaring that he's corrupt, unacceptable, which is why so few do it. And when they do, we give them credit. AOC regularly points out how Manchin is corrupt and how that's influencing him stopping any sort of legislation that would deal with the climate crisis. But then, like, you look at this, I'm gonna jump to the last screenshot. A poll of parents shows a 15-point swing to the GOP after Joe Manchin almost single-handedly killed the child tax credit. So ruining the political prospects of your party, dooming some candidates to lose rather than to remain in office, that's perfectly fine. You can do that. Actually, showing you the screenshot we just did, that's more unacceptable because he is a respected senator and you should treat him with the decorum that he has deserved. Ridiculous politics we have. Anyway, with that said, we're gonna go to our second break. When we come back, we've got a juicy block for you. Not only Jared Kushner's massive $1 billion of corruption, we're gonna be detailing that, but Trump declares himself the most honest creation that God has ever managed and then undercuts himself immediately. All that and more after this. Okay, this is a spicy corruption meatball. Let's jump into it. Just 6 months after leaving the White House, Jared Kushner cashed in, and he cashed in big to the tune of a $2 billion investment in a new investment fund that he was setting up coming from the Saudi crown prince. And if that seems corrupt, that's what it is. This is a story of corruption, and we're gonna give you all the amazing details. Starting with this, there was a Saudi screening panel, which is supposed to make sure that Saudi Arabia's public investment fund only makes wise investments. They had major concerns about investing in this affinity equity that Jared Kushner was starting. So what are some of those concerns? Well, the inexperience of the affinity fund management, which is great shade thrown at Jared Kushner himself. The possibility that the kingdom would be responsible for the bulk of the investment and risk, remember that, because we're gonna return to it. Due diligence on the fledgling firm's operations that found them unsatisfactory in all aspects. That's a red flag. A proposed asset management fee that seems excessive. Well, if you're just trying to cash in, then yeah, you'd have high fees like that. And public relations risks from Mr. Kushner's prior role as a senior advisor to his father-in-law. And bear in mind, Jared Kushner has been involved in businesses before, but you just might expect, well, all of them do this investment stuff, right? He's done it. No, this is his first, and he got $2 billion. Now, does that sound like the great launching off point into another one of these Hulu con artist shows?
Yes,
sure.
Yes.
But in terms of a wise investment strategy, not so much. So Francesca, let's dive into this. There were a lot of legitimate concerns raised there, but bear in mind that just days later, after that report came out, it was overruled. The board was overruled by the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman himself, who of course had worked with Jared Kushner when he was in the White House. Funny how that works. What do you think?
Well, I think we should be talking about Hunter Biden's laptop.
What's on it? Show me the laptop. What's on
the
hard drive?
What kinds of things has he been downloading? What's his search engine history?
Did he put it in the candy on his penis? I gotta know. That's what matters.
Putting that aside, since you are a biased lib, this is just so on brand. I love that though, that Saudi Arabia, first of all, we knew he was doing this. He was doing this before he got into the White House. He was doing this in the White House, which by the way, he never had security clearance to be inside of. And he's doing this outside of the White House. So it is just par for the course. He also stole money from the American people. I will never let anyone forget that he got like almost $4 million worth of PPP loans. So there's fraud in there, fun. But I like how Saudi Arabia has invested in like a bloody war in Yemen, starving millions of people. They murdered and dismembered an American journalist. But then when it comes to like investing in Kushner's thing, they're like, I don't know.
It seems inexperienced.
Seems a little risky.
Yeah, it seems risky. He hasn't done this before. Apparently, there's no like, they haven't stated what the philosophy or the target like sectors that this fund is even gonna invest in. It's like he came up with the idea and just like, yeah, I'll do this. And they're like, yeah, no, here's $2 billion. But it's actually even a little bit dirtier than you might think for a few reasons, which we're gonna dive into. So first of all, this could be perceived as corrupt because it could be seen as payback for what Kushner did for Saudi Arabia while he was in the White House, which of course would be bad. But it could also be seen as equally corrupt, perhaps more so, because Jared Kushner could well be back in the White House in a couple of years. This could be an investment, not in affinity equity, but in the second Trump administration if it happens.
Sure.
And I'm so glad that you brought up Hunter Biden, because like they will focus on the drug stuff and the sex stuff with Hunter Biden, but they will pretend that their concerns are substantive. This is about someone related to the president being paid by a foreign power to influence Biden. It's not about Hunter and the laptop, it's about Joe. Well, what's this, man? That's $2 billion. And we don't need to delve into a laptop to find out the details. It's all publicly reported. But suddenly, massive infusions of foreign money into the familial inner circle of a president, not something that they're worried about. Other concerns, one is that, and I mentioned this earlier, that they could be responsible for the bulk of the investment and risk. He wants to raise $7 billion, a lot of money. And hey, I say, you know, grind every day or whatever, but he's raised $2.5 billion. That means two out of the $2.5 billion is just from this investment fund from the Saudis. And the thing is, there's another part of this potential corruption. That is that Steven Mnuchin has also gotten, through his Liberty Strategic Capital, $1 billion from this Saudi fund. There are some differences though. So first of all, he has raised money from a number of other places. Mnuchin did not just get it from the Saudis solely. Mnuchin has prior experience in managing funds like this, and the target sectors that the fund is gonna be investing in actually lines up with what the Saudis invested. Now, is it still corrupt? Yeah, probably. But at least there's some cover here. For Kushner though, it basically is MBS was like, no, I wanna do this. There's no good reason. We're gonna lose money. This entire thing's gonna fall apart like Truth Social, but we're doing it anyway. And so just massive potential for not just as a reward for what happened already, but they could be setting themselves up for massive arms deals once Trump is president again. The whole thing is absolutely dirty.
I mean, it's amazing we can get away with if you just have an orb that you can dance with and a sword. You got a sword, an orb, lots of oil. It's just like a winning combo. Sword, orb, oil. It's brilliant. And I also think this is clearly an investment in the future to see if Trump is gonna be back in the White House. Mnuchin, Has Mnuchin been dancing with the stars? Does he come out with a book? No. Will he? Probably. If Trump is not reelected. Oh, Mnuchin makes my skin crawl. Mnuchin makes me want to throw things. I can't even talk about Mnuchin. Yeah.
We haven't talked about him much since they left, but he was one of those figures that we were having to contend with on a daily basis. And thankfully, he's at least not involved.
The foreclosure king. They were like, oh, this man has some experience with finances. He's foreclosed on many, many families. Yay. Exactly.
And in terms of what's going to happen as a result of this story, no matter how obviously dirty it is, no law or rules constrain the investment activities of former administration officials after leaving the White House, even when it comes to money from other countries. So like the rules we have for what they can't do are so pathetic in the face of what they're allowed to. The MBS could come out with a statement right now. It's like, no, I'm just buying them off. And I don't know that he would be in any trouble. A transfer of billions of dollars. Yeah, we'll
I
see how that ends up going.
Don't like this country.
I'm not a
there,
big fan.
I said it. I'm not a huge fan of this country when we have open corruption like this.
Yeah. Good breakfast burritos, though. We
good
do have that.
Good breakfast burrito. Yeah.
Okay, well, we are running rapidly out of hours. So let's have a little bit of fun and give you an update on a big primary. Starting with this.
I've got to be the cleanest sheriff. I think I'm the most honest human being, perhaps that God ever created, perhaps. Instead of.
Okay, now, admittedly, they do cheer, but you'll note that even his devoted MAGA base initially greeted the claim that he was the most honest human ever with laughter. They get what's going on. I do think that they trust him more than they should, but even they, Francesca, know that he is not known for being particularly honest there. I think it's subtle shade from the audience. They love it. They don't care.
They're just like, rob me more, king. You know, lie to me.
Daddy.
Yes. Yep. Defraud me, daddy. That is totally, we should make shirts that just say defraud me, daddy in MAGA font. They love that. He's laughing in their faces. They are the butt of the joke and they know it.
Yeah.
They're like, but I'm in on the joke. It's like, no, but you're the butt of it. Yeah, but I'm in.
Yeah. He says, in terms of how honest he was proven to be, I've been investigated by the Democrats more than Billy the Kid, Jesse James, Al Capone, and all of them, basically. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Totally honest. In 4 years, there were fact checks done showing 30,573 false or misleading claims. And that's just a representative sample. By the way, you can see this chart of the claims. He just doesn't really take any breaks. January around the election was when that big jump made. He had like one day where he told like 500 lies, which boy, you got to wake up early to lie that much. And this is the distribution. He's a big old liar. Now, in terms of his attachment to the truth, he's made some interesting choices recently, including weighing in on the contested Republican primary for Senate in Pennsylvania. He has endorsed Dr. Oz. And apparently, for some in the MAGA world, this is a bridge too far. This is the line they might not be able to follow him over. Joel Pollack, editor of Breitbart, says this could divide MAGA in the only way that matters. He could lose America First conservatives over it.
Ooh.
Which seems like a bold claim that they will ditch Donald Trump because he supported Dr. Oz. Are they that invested in this primary, Francesca?
I don't know. Was it because Dr. Oz like eats celery, like or vegetable? Like, what is it? Why are they mad?
He had chai once.
Yeah, exactly. He's a coastal elite. Like, of course, Dr. Oz is so on brand Trump. Like, they are both celebrities. This is, don't you get that? That's why you like this guy. You just liked a different brand of celebrity. This is Oprah's doctor or whatever the hell. Oprah, by the way, has some splaining to do.
100%. Yeah. And by the way, this is the one that might be a bridge too far, not Herschel Walker saying insane things about evolution and COVID and apparently being alleged to have conducted some spousal abuse. It's not that. It's not that he liked Roy Moore before. It's not that he supports Sarah Palin. It's just, and look, Dr. Oz is bad. He is a serial liar. Affiliating yourself with a guy known for conning people for decades is admittedly on brand, but undercuts his claim that he's the most honest human ever. It's weird though that this is the thing that might split the MAGA movement. We're gonna have to see how that shakes out. Anyway, that is all the time we have for this first hour. Thank you to those of you listening on the podcast or on our linear platforms. Love to have you here. If you're on YouTube or Twitch or the members app, there's a lot more coming. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.